On the cutting room floor. I've done acting work a few times, but I don't enjoy it much. Too much waiting around involved. I've always been struck by how remarkably unglamorous filming work is. More boring than anything else. The glamour, if any, always seems to turn up sometime later. In the days when film had to be sent away and processed before they could tell whether or not they'd got what they wanted, there was always an atmosphere of anxiety on the job, and the directors usually asked for many retakes, just to make sure they had it in the can. Using extra film was cheaper than having to set it all up again. A 13-to-1 cutting ratio was considered normal. As well as this, you usually had to have a lead from the sound recordist hidden in the shrubbery, up the leg of your pants to a lumpy microphone taped inside your shirt, which severely restricted any movement. The advent of video cameras with instant replay and the tiny radio microphones had removed most of these hassles, but it's still a fiddly business as far as I'm concerned. Notwithstanding all that, there is one acting experience I won't forget in a hurry. Not long back, I got roped into doing a short promotional film for New Zealand Tourism, working with a famous American television personality called Lisa Gibbons. Crump, the Kiwi bushman, was supposed to run into this American tourist on the Milford track and offer to show her a shortcut back to her hotel, but he gets them bushed and they end up on a ledge at the top of the Sutherland Falls, thus showing off some of New Zealand's spectacular scenery. We were working from the tourist hotel at the head of Milford Sound and had to wait around for 4 days because of dirty weather. Finally, the rain stopped and we were able to get on with it. The first bit went off okay. Lisa walks along through the bush and a dead wild pig crashes down onto the track in front of her, followed by this character with a rifle. They get talking and it turns out that she doesn't know quite where she is. It's getting a bit late in the day, so he offers to show her the shortcut he knows about. Then there came the tricky bit. They put us in a helicopter and dropped us in a tiny ledge on the top of Sutherland Falls and left us there. I didn't like it. The ledge was about 12 feet wide with 2 feet of snow on it and the river running through the middle of it, and it sloped over into sheer 3,000-foot drop into the valley. There's a lake at the top of those falls, and the idea that this chopper flew across the lake with a camera on the skid and here were these two people standing at the top of the falls and Crump's voice saying, "This wasn't here when I came by earlier on." The chopper disappeared. I'd never trusted those flimsy things, and if anything happened to this one, we were dead by nightfall. It was freezing cold, and we weren't dressed for snow and ice. Already our hands and feet were numb. It was a long time before we heard the chopper again. They were off getting the camera rigged up. For the first time in my life, I was stricken with what I found out later was vertigo. And that's no fun, believe me. By the time we heard them coming, I was propped into the snow, trying not to tip outwards into space. "Shouldn't you be on the rock beside me?" suggested Lisa, who was taking this crazy stunt remarkably calmly. "I'll get up there when that bloody chopper comes past," I replied courageously. When the chopper approached, I made myself get up onto the rock beside her, and as soon as it had gone past, I got down on the snow again, where I felt slightly safer. I wasn't going to get any Oscars for this performance. They did 3 more runs, taking about 10 minutes over each one, and by the time the chopper returned and hovered to pick us up, I was on the verge of total panic. Without waiting for Lisa, I chivalrously grabbed a skid and clawed my way into the chopper and told the pilot to get me the hell out of here. I resented him waiting around for her to get in too. Back at the hotel, I had a hot shower and got into warm, dry clothes and repaired to the bar and armed with a double whiskey. I was feeling almost human again. Then one of the crew came and told me that they'd been viewing the footage they'd got and it wasn't what they wanted. We were going to have to do it again after lunch. I laughed at them. "Like hell," I said. "They're not getting me up there again for all the tea in China, the deer in Fiordland or the trout in Lake Taupo." Lisa didn't want to go back up there either, though it was only the cold that put her off the idea, so they decided that they'd have to use stand-ins. Personally, I didn't care what they used. A mate of mine who'd come with me on the adventure was about my build, and the cameraman's wife was tall and blonde, so after lunch they dressed them up in our gear and flew off with them. Lisa and I sat in the sun in the hotel balcony yarning. As well as being a good looker, she was an interesting woman to talk to. Been all sorts of places and done all sorts of things, but neither of us had ever done anything like we had done that morning. We'd shared a unique experience and that made us mates. We got along great guns. The chopper was away for about 2 hours, and when it landed back at the hotel, we could see straight away that something hadn't gone quite right. The cameraman's wife was in a hell of a state. They bundled her off to the hotel room where she stayed all afternoon. No doubt getting her wits back into order. I knew exactly what she'd gone through on that time.